Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Text message.
Uh-oh.
Yep. Here's a question. Since the Texans activated Jordan Thomas, tight end, is it possible the Texans are going to unveil some three tight end sets against the Patriots?
They unveiled them last week. Didn't look all that great early on. So they've... The veiling has been unveiled.
It's been unveiled. Do you think they'll use some of them against the Patriots?
I think so. I mean, it's hard because the Ravens did it really well. Well, wait a second. You know what? I'm sorry. Go back and... The Ravens did it really well, but they do it all year long. So do the Texans do it this week? Because Jordan Thomas didn't actually play last week, did he?
He played like 7 or 8 snaps.
That's what I thought. Okay, yeah. Well, what am I looking at? Stupid. I'm trying to look at snap counts here. It wasn't effective, and I think for multiple reasons. I don't think it's as simple as just saying, hey, the Ravens worked it really well, and you should go out and do that. The Texans don't, other than Darren Fells, the Texans tight ends don't operate within the run game as effectively as the Ravens guys do.
Yeah.
And I went back and watched that game, and a lot of those guys, even though they're not great blockers, what they do really well is move quickly and authoritatively and assertively. And Jordan Thomas and Jordan Akins don't quite do that just yet. So the question is, okay, with this extra little bit of time they have to prepare, Are they able to do that better than they did last week? I think they will. Jordan Thomas is obviously just kind of rusty.
Yeah. If you want to text in 713-572-4610, the Texans may have been, Seth, you found this topic here about this the NFL analytics person. Talking
Cynthia Freeland. Is it Cynthia Freeland? She does. I didn't know this. She's on NFL Network, but she also has created a model where she tracks players' movement on the screen and tells you exactly how teams are playing and whatnot.
She's a good follow.
So she's a very good follow, but she does do work with teams on the side. And she was describing her work with one team this offseason.
So she's like an analytics freelancer.
Apparently. I don't know how that works, that she can work for the NFL Network but also work for teams independently.
Yeah.
Maybe they get to use her for free. Maybe that's part of her job deal. Maybe they're like, hey, we want to commission this study.
Like a concierge.
So it got me to thinking, she's describing this one team. Does this sound like this might be a team we know?
Ooh.
Have you consulted with any teams?
I do. I actively consult with teams, but you don't hear about it.
So multiple income streams.
Tell us like your bank account. Let's get into that.
Okay, so we got an annuity, and then it's the end of year, so you got to consider what you're going to be doing with your tax status. So we're in California. You got to go make some donations. You're going to pay a lot of taxes.
Smart is smart.
So no, but what I like to do, the best teams, look, just like everything else, if I'm listening to you and you're listening to me and we can come up with something better together. I don't know. Like, I know a bunch of people who, like, do, like, analytics, or they say it. I don't even know what that word is.
All right, you know what? Ben, I messed up and gave you the wrong time to come in. There's a preamble to what she was... Ben, listen through and to get to the point where she talks about the part where she's actually...
Why don't you just impersonate her?
You know what? Should I just give a recap?
Yes.
Okay. Apologies to everybody in the greater Houston area.
It's Wednesday before Thanksgiving.
I'm impersonating Cynthia Freeland right now. I'm going to say this. There's a radio host in Houston that used the wrong cue because he likes Greg Rosenthal. So he assumed that Greg Rosenthal was leading. So she did a study in the offseason looking at different running backs.
Okay.
Running backs of a certain type. And it sounded the way she was describing it.
She did this study on behalf of an NFL team.
On behalf of an NFL team. Okay. She did not divulge who they were. But it sounded a whole lot like it could have been the Texans. And I got excited when I felt like it was the Texans because they wanted to know about all these running backs. It sounded like it might not be marquee running backs, but just guys that could do certain things. It might be
players
at a certain level. That could be role players.
Yeah.
And I thought back to when Bill O'Brien, seems like it was around... May, June, July, when he said, hey, the backup running back might not be on the roster right now.
Yeah.
And it's sort
of an interesting
like,
connecting of the dots right there.
Right.
By
well,
you.
O'Brien, I got excited at that point because O'Brien, I think, as he was operating like the GM, was also, you know, kind of in line with this modern theory of running backs can be kind of considered commodities in a lot of ways. And there are a lot of guys that you can plug in to do certain things, and you try to find different guys to do different tasks and chores. That's what the Texans did. They went out and they traded for Duke Johnson. You could argue that they paid too much. If he based it on the analytics of Cynthia Freeland or anybody else, I feel a little bit more excited. I'm like, okay, there's a method to, not even, I don't want to say the madness, but there's a little bit of a method here. There's
if
some planning.
If the Texans were the team that commissioned the study by Cynthia Freeland,
yeah,
then would that make sense? I think it would make sense. I think...
Well, Carlos Hyde, too, is the other big part. Which is more... Carlos Hyde is still one of my favorite moves that the GM committee has made.
Yeah.
Because this is one that cost you nothing. This was just a shifting of... This was as pure a trade as there can be because both teams were going to get rid of these guys. And they said, wait a second. Before you throw that trash out there, let me pick it up from the curb.
There are aspects about the flat organizational structure that I really love the way they operate in terms of constructing the roster. I love that they put a claim in on Vernon Hargraves, who is essentially a penny stock when he gets waived by the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. He's a former 11th overall pick whose issues have not been physical. They've been... effort issues, which, you know, you hope that if a guy like that gets into a different environment, that maybe he starts playing to the level of what his physical traits say he should be playing, and where he has frankly played at times in the NFL. He's not a guy who looks like he's been overwhelmed physically in the NFL. He's a guy who looks who's looked disinterested in playing for various coaches and staffs in Tampa Bay. So I love that move. Like the churning of bringing guys in because you don't have the optimal solution on the hope that these guys might be the optimal solution. I like the mentality. I don't know the so that part I really like. I like O'Brien slash the flat organizational structures. I like that they're not averse to churn and that they're not averse to bringing new faces in and trying new things to try to get this damn thing right. The part that scares me a little bit is I don't know that they're fully in line with what the value metric is on bringing some of these guys in.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like
the desperation level, there's two ends of the spectrum. One is Carlos Hyde you got for nothing.
Right.
You're going to get rid of Martinez Rankin anyway. And then the other side is Laremy Tunsil, where you paid an absolute premium. The thing that's making me feel a little bit better about that, too, and again, where even if I disagree with the price Bill O'Brien paid, I still, at this point, I'm now more convinced that there was a method behind determining that price than I was at the time. Because we've seen a lot of articles written now, and we've seen other marquee players traded for two first-round picks, Jalen Ramsey, and... There's a belief that maybe first-round picks are overvalued to a certain degree in the modern NFL, especially with an expanding cap. So I think that the GM committee or Bill O'Brien or however you want to phrase it, I don't think it was a sheer desperation move. I think there was a spreadsheet behind it,
yeah.
You know, which that's all I want. I wanted to believe that they were operating with some kind of a cogent plan.
And I
think there is.
Yeah, I think so, too. And I do like the part of those trades that is the urgency that it indicates. Like they are operating with an urgency. They are operating they're operating almost in a cold fashion in some ways, just in the way they're churning the roster. Like, hey, if you're not getting the job done, sorry, see you later. Too bad, so sad. I just wish they'd done it with Aaron Colvin before the Saints game, and the Texans might be 8-3 right now instead of 7-4.
That part,
nevertheless,
if there's one thing, okay, opening drives and opening games with Bill O'Brien.
Yeah.
Opening drives have just been an abject disaster so far.
Yes.
I would like some of the analytics bros out there to go ahead, and gals, Cynthia Freeland, to go ahead and commission. I need to figure out if this is the worst opening drive team that's ever been in the NFL in comparison to what else they do, especially in comparison to the second, third, and fourth quarters.
Well, if you're going to judge it just purely on output, on points,
yeah,
it's hard to be worse than three points through 11 games.
Yardage. Yardage is the yardage feels even worse.
2 yards per play.
Yards per play on all these plays. So there's that, and then the opening game where routinely, it seems like every year the first game is treated like the third preseason game. Yeah. Like, hey, we're going to figure out who the starters are this week.
It's, you know, it's funny. You know how we talk about players once they've played 16 games of a certain sample that we're using? We're like, oh, this is easy because that's a full season, right? Like, T.Y. Hilton's a classic example. He's now played 16 games against the Texans, so it's easy to look at his numbers against the Texans and equate it to a full NFL season for a player and go, wow, this guy's amazing because he's got 1,600 yards against the Texans. That's like a full all-pro season. The Texans have now had 11 opening drives. That's almost like a full game. Most right. teams get 11 or 12 drives in a game.
Yeah.
So that's almost like a full game. They've got something like, I don't have the exact numbers in front of me, something like 57 plays for 132 yards. Some ridiculous 2 yard per play number with six punts. Or 7 punts, 3 turnovers, and 3 points.
If I'm going to look on the...
It'd be one of the worst games in the history of the franchise.
If I could find a silver lining in that, yeah. it would be this. If I were going to try to spin that...
this is going
to
be
good. Enter my spin zone. No, I mean, it's actually... It's at least partially true.
Okay.
What a lot of teams like to do in the first drive or two also in the scripted plays is run a bunch of different stuff, try to figure out how the defense is going to respond to yeah. it, and then make your adjustments. You could argue that Bill O'Brien has done a great job off of that. Bill O'Brien and Tim Kelly, whatever they're learning by being horrible in that first drive, they use it to go on and have really productive second, third, and fourth quarters. I'd like to find somewhere in the middle.
Yeah.
Somewhere you don't have to necessarily...
You're still scoring points.
We don't have to be Thomas Edison with a light bulb here, okay? We don't have to fail 97 times before we get the right
That's
one.
That's interesting. That's an interesting theory, though. You're equating it to like a boxing match where the two boxers are sort of just feeling each other out for the boxing-wise, feeling each other out for the first or second round. There's, you know, just a little bit of almost shadow boxing
yeah.
going on. Yeah. Interesting. Let's take a look at the hot seat in the NFL. Which NFL head coaches, especially in light of what's going on up in Dallas, have the league's hottest seats as we head into the home stretch? And if Jason Garrett gets let go by the Cowboys, there is an awfully, awfully entertaining place that he could wind up. We'll hit that next. Boy, how's this for a ringing endorsement, Seth? Pittsburgh Steelers head coach Mike Tomlin on Devlin Hodges, who was named the starting quarterback this coming weekend for the Steelers.
Mm-hmm.
Quote, he's not killed us.
Well, he provides a spark. It's interesting. I remember talking to Wade Phillips about Schaub and that whole scenario. And then to listen
talking about all the pick sixes and stuff?
Yeah, well, but then listening to various other coaches talk about it through the years. And even the most... Like, even the most cerebral, analytically minded coach, when it comes to evaluating quarterbacks, sometimes it just simply comes down to, we got to change something. Well, I'm looking for a spark. And they used that word spark when they made the quarterback change. They moved off of Mason Rudolph. I think even more so than a spark, you need somebody that's not going to kill you.
Yeah.
Mason Rudolph was killing them. Mason Rudolph was throwing an interception damn near every other drive he was out there. So yeah. When Tomlin says he wasn't killing us, I think that might actually be a little bit more of a compliment than he's letting on.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's probably more. It probably says more about Rudolph than it does about Hodges, right? Like we had to take Rudolph out. It could be a cardboard cutout of somebody of Devlin Hodges, and it's going to be better than what Mason Rudolph was doing.
There was also I saw a picture of Devlin and James Washington out turkey hunting or something the other morning.
Oh, yeah?
So he's got that going for him.
So Hodges and James Washington were out in the wilderness.
Yeah. Well, wilderness, who knows? You know, 20 miles outside of Pittsburgh.
They were bonding.
You can get at a pretty country pretty fast outside
of
Pittsburgh.
You can.
And, yeah, they were bonding. And James Washington had one of the fiercest stiff arms I've ever seen in my entire life last week.
Yeah.
James Washington stiff-armed a Bengals defender. And then the defender, as he was kind of on his heels, crossed himself up. It was savage. I still think about that poor guy.
Yeah.
He had to go through film on Monday and then maybe again today.
Yeah.
That's a rough,
week.
Yeah.
What does it say about Mason Rudolph that his former college teammate, James Washington, is out there chopping it up with his backup? With Mason Rudolph's backup. Mason Rudolph looked like such a D. He just looked like such a D-bag in that whole Myles Garrett thing.
Yeah.
That, like, somehow a dude who got hit in the head with a helmet is not a sympathetic figure.
Who's okay?
So I choose to believe that James Washington is like, yeah, I'm sick of the guy. I've had to hang out with him in college and now with my NFL team. I'm going to go hang out with Devlin Hodges.
The fallout from that whole event is going to be that I think most of those, both of those guys might end up being the least respected dudes around.
If, Garrett and Rudolph.
If Garrett falsely accused Rudolph of using a racial slur,
right,
and if Rudolph started the whole damn thing and then tried to act like he was the victim completely. Now, he shouldn't have gotten his head hit with a helmet. I'm not saying that at all.
Right.
But don't act like you were completely innocent either. Those guys right now, if that's the way it ends up playing out, I got no use for either of them.
Yeah.
If audio emerges, and they're
well, that changes things.
Then there's one guy that's going to look really bad.
That changes things. Ian Rappaport on the NFL Network had an interesting thing to say about Jason Garrett, especially in light of the fact that Jerry Jones seems to be none too happy with his coaching staff right now. Here's Ian Rappaport on what could ultimately happen with Jason Garrett.
The job status of Jason Garrett is always a conversation in Dallas. Meanwhile, the Giants are struggling again under Coach Pat Shurmur in his second year. So let's fast forward a little bit. What if the Giants move on from Shurmur? What if the Cowboys and Jason Garrett part ways? My understanding is the Giants have emerged as a real and legitimate potential landing spot for Garrett. First of all, it is his preferred destination if he can't stick with the Cowboys. And second, back in 2014, the Giants were trying to decide, should they fire Tom Coughlin? My understanding is they would have fired Coughlin if they could get Jason Garrett. Instead, he signed an extension. Giants held on to Coughlin. We'll keep watching this one.
What? None of that makes any sense.
The Giants hiring Jason Garrett?
That doesn't make any sense. But then everything they said after that, too. Wait a second. They would have fired Coughlin if they could have gotten Jason Garrett.
Yes.
If they could have somehow. How are we going to get this gem? How are we going to okay, look, we've got this guy that's won 2 Super Bowls for us. And look, it looks like maybe that ship has sailed. But the only thing, what year did he say that was?
2014.
So that was after both Super Bowls. So they, this doesn't make any sense at all. And now, in 2014.
I'm just the messenger.
That was how many years removed after the second Super Bowl? That was
3
years removed. Yeah. Oh my gosh. This can't be. There's no possible way. There's no possible way that Tisch and all in that ownership group, they understand what would happen with the media up there, right? They understand what would happen to Jason Garrett.
If they want to hire him now, I think they're about to find out again.
Yeah.
What could happen if they hire Jason Garrett.
And it's not just, I say the media, like the media would be the voice of the fans,
yes,
in those circumstances. New York sports fans, they're a passionate bunch. We noticed that, did we not, when we were watching the Astros play the Yankees?
Right.
I don't think it's going to be Astros fans that are getting pelted with beer bottles. I think Giants ownership is going to have to invest in armored cars if they hired Jason Garrett,
yeah,
to come in and be your football coach. This is how you make up for the atrocity.
Apparently
of
so.
the post-Coughlin years.
Yes.
Is by hiring Jason Garrett.
Isn't it crazy?
No. Now, if Rappaport's reporting this, he's not the only one. Other sources have reported this.
And Rappaport's a credible. He is not a no luck confirma. Rappaport is, you know, generally speaking, Rappaport and Schefter are the two guys that are newsbreakers.
I don't understand how they've made such a mockery of this organization. That it's
the Giants. Into
the Giants, right? The way they handled Eli Manning.
I think it stems from
Ben McAdoo era.
I think it stems from the handling of Eli Manning. Quite honestly, in my opinion, I'm not around the team every day, obviously, but just as an observer from afar, they let him quarterback this team into oblivion about 4 years too late. They should have cut bait with Eli Manning in like 2015.
Look,
and he was still quarterbacking the team at the beginning of 2019.
Look, I understand firing Coughlin. That's the way it works in the NFL, and yeah, it hadn't been a great few years. So it was time for him to go. But this notion, and this is why I'm taken aback by them saying that they would have fired Coughlin earlier if they'd been able to get Jason Garrett. Okay, so that was the one. So it's not just, hey, we fired our coach, now we got to find somebody.
Right.
Jason Garrett was the apple of their eye.
Yeah.
Okay, that didn't work out. So then what happens? What happens when Tom Coughlin is ultimately fired? It's because they feared losing who? Ben McAdoo.
Yeah.
They thought Ben McAdoo was going to get the coaching job with what? The Bucks at that point?
Is that what it was?
They didn't want that to happen. Can't let go of Ben McAdoo. So they fired Tom Coughlin. So this is now Ben McAdoo and Jason Garrett, who we've identified as the guys that the Giants just can't live without.
Right.
They gotta. This is
quite the hiring.
This is
process.
Full of the franchise nonsense. This is get rid of the ownership group. Get rid of the GM. Get rid of everybody.
So what would have made Jason Garrett so desirable in 2014? Well, he had gone. Okay, he had gone in his first three full seasons with the Cowboys, 8-8, 8-8, 8-8. But then he had gone to 12-4 in 2014.
So it was a hot commodity.
His stock was, and he won a playoff game.
Yeah.
So his stock was at an all-time high.
Okay.
Yeah. For Jason Garrett, that is. Not for the market.
This decade has just flown by. What was his first year?
He was an interim. He was the interim the year they fired Wade Phillips in 2010.
In 2010, right.
And he turned that thing around. They were 1-7 to start the season.
Yeah.
Their one win was against the Texans, by the way. And he went 5-3 down the stretch. And then he went 8-8, 8-8, 8-8. But then in 2014, he was 12-4. That was the Dez Bryant catch controversy playoff run.
The Dez Turner, the decade was ushered in with the Dez Bryant controversy.
Yeah.
That's how it was almost a full damn near decade of the catch rule issues.
Yeah.
With the NFL. You know what? Credit to the NFL. They kind of figured it out. It took a while, but they kind of figured out. They cleaned up the catch stuff, at least. Now we got a whole other host of issues with interference and whatnot. There's something about the NFC East that it's an incestuous situation because the Redskins, remember, hired Norv Turner after Norv Turner had been the offensive coordinator for the Cowboys. Got to have Norv Turner. Right. Norv Turner, at one point, I knew a coach who walked into Norv Turner's office where Norv Turner was crying because he couldn't handle the stress of the Washington Redskins.
Wow.
That's
an outing
You know what Norv Turner did? Norv Turner, when he was the head coach of the Washington Redskins, you know what he did when he first got there? In his office, behind his chair in his office, he had a picture of who? Troy Aikman.
He had
a picture of the Dallas Cowboys quarterback.
That's weird.
Well, because that was his protege, you know, Norv Turner.
It's what's gotten him every job he's ever had.
Right. Well, Norv Turner is a really good offensive coordinator. Don't get me wrong, but like this is how you're the NFC East. Act like it. Act like you're one of the most you're the oldest, most esteemed division in the National Football League.
Right.
And this is what you're doing. You're hiring other divisions coaches. That Parcells going to the Cowboys. All this.
Was it a picture of Troy Aikman actually playing football, or was it one of those glam headshots that you see in like Italian restaurants of comedians where they're looking real pensive and they're like, "Hey, nothing's finer than your diner." Signed,
It was actually a picture of Norv Turner with his face in one of those cardboard cutout photos that where you can take your picture as
that's what it was.
As Troy Aikman.
Gotcha.
Yeah. He was touching himself. He was grabbing his boobs.
didn't see it going there.
He was caressing his breasts.
All right, no easy segue here. If you know a high school senior athlete that's being raised by a single mother, nominate him for the Houston Sports Authority Brothers in Arms Diversity Scholarship. December 1st is the deadline. This is a really, really cool thing that Andre Ware, Warren Moon, Vince Young, and Deshaun Watson have collaborated on. They were all raised by single moms, so they've been inspired by their upbringing to help a senior athlete in high school to help fund their education. And you can learn more about it, brothersinarmshouston.com. The deadline's December 1st, but if you know a high school senior athlete raised by a single mother, get them to brothersinarmshouston.com right now to apply for that scholarship. The winner will be announced at the 2020 Houston Sports Awards presented by Insperity on January 21st. Up next, we may get a real barometer this week on how angry fans are around baseball at the Houston Astros, and we'll tell you how next. John McClain jumps in with us at the top of the hour on a Wednesday before Thanksgiving edition of the show. We have a power ranking on the website. We'll need to go through this at some point on the show, Seth. Our boss had us power rank 10 Thanksgiving foods.
Yeah.
And I feel like you and I are about to throw hands during the break over a few of these. Apparently, you're not all that happy with my opinion on pie.
You ranked pie 10th out of 10.
I did it because I like all the substantive dinner foods better than
you like green bean casserole better than pie.
Better than
one
pumpkin.
Day a year where you don't have to worry about eating healthy or anything.
Better than pumpkin pie.
It didn't say pumpkin pie. It just said pie.
But usually at my table, it winds up being, at the ones I go to, the pie winds up being pumpkin pie. Although Amy's mom does make a delicious cheesecake.
Yeah.
Can I count that as the pie?
not, it's too late now.
It is too late now. It's your,
your cultural bias is showing. I'm blaming white privilege.
Cultural bias.
I don't know how or why, but that's what I'm going to do.
Probably.
It's damn white privilege.
Very 2019
you know,
it was
like
of you.
For my people.
Yeah. Your people.
We couldn't afford pumpkin pie.
Your people.
That's right.
Your people are different than my people.
Yeah.
All right. Well,
if you really want to go back at it, you're Irish, I'm English. There's a little bit of a, you know.
It's amazing we're doing a radio show.
Yeah, right? Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Who knew? Did you see what Major League Baseball is doing? They're doing, for the first time, an all MLB team. Sort of like the baseball version of the all-pro team. You know, in football, you've got the Pro Bowl, where it's AFC, NFC, and they play in a game or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And then they have all-pro, which the writers vote on, and it's literally the best of the best. Like, if you're the all-pro quarterback first team, you are the best quarterback of all 32 teams in the NFL. They've never done this in baseball before, apparently. Now, they're not doing it in the same format that Major League or that the NFL does in terms of the voting constituency. The fans actually have a say in this, in the all-MLB team. They've narrowed it down to a handful of nominees at each position. It's not like the All-Star ballot where every team is represented at every position and there's just a ton of names. They've narrowed it down to nominees at each of the positions, including DH. There will be 5 starting pitchers and 2 relievers.
Right.
And the fans get 50% of the vote, and a panel of baseball experts, air quotes, get the other 50% of the vote. Normally, I don't even know that I would spend a segment breaking this thing down in late November or whatever, except for a couple of reasons. One, we're in Houston, and this is actually something where, hey, look, a lot of Astro names. The Astros have more players on the ballot. There's only 60 players total on the ballot. The Astros have 10 of them, of the 60, that are on the ballot for this thing. And the next closest one is the Red Sox with 7.
It's interesting because, again, the leagues, I guess probably the leagues matter more in baseball than any other sport, wouldn't you say?
Well, especially because there's literal rule differences.
It's like you're actually playing different forms of the game.
Yes.
Kind of.
Yeah.
So you kind of obviously, I'm guessing there's no DH position on here.
There is actually.
Oh,
yes.
Really?
Yes.
So
there's a DH.
So we've got a decided advantage in that category.
Well,
as a league, not as the Astros, but as a league.
I think Jordan's going to get some votes, quite honestly. I think Nelson Cruz is probably going to wind up being the designated hitter on there. But Jordan is one of the 10 Astros that are on here. The only positions that the Astros are not represented on here, shortstop, Carlos Correa was not one of the shortstops.
Yeah.
They had like 7 shortstops. Carlos Correa was not one of them. Josh Reddick among the starters was not on there, but the other 2 outfielders, Springer and Brantley, were. I can't see the ballot because I voted already within the last 24 hours, so they won't let me look at the ballot again.
Oh, okay. So I guess the question is,
and then of the pitchers,
right,
Verlander, Cole, Greinke made it, and Osuna made it among closers.
So the question is, are the Astros going to suffer for the current scandal going on right now? Where, mind you, baseball's taking its sweet time, as they should. They should take the time because, hey, Manfred, you claim that you're going to look at everything that comes in. So anything from any other teams, I would imagine you would also investigate. So, but if fans are voting, we know the fans are going to be affected by the Astros stuff.
Yeah.
So I think there are a lot of fans out there who might otherwise have voted for an Astro who at this point are saying, no, not a single Astro will I vote for.
That's my question. Is this just going to give us maybe a sort of a low-key barometer on how fans around baseball are feeling about the Astros? Because I'll be honest with you, Seth, I think Bregman should be the third baseman.
Uh-huh.
I think Cole and Verlander should be 2 of the 5 pitchers. I think Springer should get some serious consideration as one of the outfielders. I think Greinke probably for his overall season. You look at Greinke's numbers for the season. They're really, really good. He was 18-5 on the season. I think he was like 8-1 as an Astro.
And especially, well,
even Osuna.
Because it goes across. Greinke's the perfect example of why this is a cool team because it spans both leagues.
He was in both leagues.
It's not just AL or NL thing.
Yeah.
He played in both leagues.
But if none of these guys make it, I think there is something to the sort of feelings towards the Astros. I have a hard time believing Cole and Verlander don't make it. I mean, Verlander won the damn Cy Young.
Well, and that's
Cole was the best pitcher in baseball.
Right. The scandal, at least what they're alleged to have done, that doesn't affect the pitchers necessarily.
If
you're going to make some argument that the run support helps them so that they benefited from the...
I think that's actually an okay argument if you want to know the truth.
Except that Verlander doesn't get all that much run support. So.
Yeah, yeah.
So I don't know. That's the other part about this, too. All these teams, so fans a bunch of fans want Gerrit Cole to come to their team. And nobody hates the Astros right now more than, I would say, Dodgers fans and Yankees fans. That seems to be where it's mostly concentrated.
Because they were directly impacted by the scandal?
Allegedly.
Allegedly. Sorry. Oops. Yeah.
And the Yankees have already been pinched for cheating, but they'll still be just as mad. But the Yankees and the Dodgers both also want Gerrit Cole. What's it going to be like when Gerrit Cole shows up to one of those places? Is there going to be kind of a...
I think that's going to be... You're saying at those places, what's it going to be like?
There's
going to be a freaking party.
There's going to be a party, but there's also got to be... If they're making all these claims about how vile and awful the Astros organization is, well, then, by extension, Gerrit Cole would have just been standing by and watching all that happen, too, in their eyes.
Yeah.
So I think this...
I think they'll get over it.
My argument to the Yankees and the Dodgers is that you can't in good conscience pursue Gerrit Cole.
Right.
Out of respect to your fans.
Yeah.
Out of respect to the game and your fans, you really shouldn't be doing this.
I'm glad you threw the game in there.
Yes.
You need to throw random salvos of respect for the game of baseball.
Yes,
there.
For the integrity.
And you're not pounding your fists enough on the table.
It has everything to do with apple pie, pumpkin pie, French fries, the American way.
Are you mixing the pie in there to throw shade at my power rankings?
Capitalism, all things American, all things that true Americans believe in.
Yep.
Then for that reason, you should not pursue Gerrit Cole.
How many of these Astros do you think make the... there's going to be a first team and a second team.
Well, I honestly think they're really going to suffer from the fans. So,
my topic in this segment, you think has some legitimacy to it?
I think the Astros fans need to come up big and show their support, which I think they are. The Astros fans have circled the wagons.
It would be nice, except this damn website only lets you vote once every 24 hours.
They'll figure. Sean, we're talking about the Astros here. We can figure out a way around it.
That's true.
Let's just go ahead and
we hardwired a monitor into the clubhouse. We can figure this out.
We'll get a VPN, and everybody, is that what it's called?
A VPN.
The VPN, where you can disguise where you're from.
Yeah,
we're gonna get Bregman's gonna get so many votes from Lithuania, all the Eastern Bloc countries,
that's right.
And Azerbaijan.
Okay, if there were no cheating scandal, how many do you think would make it?
If there were no cheating scandal, then Bregman, Altuve. First or second team?
First or second
team. I think Yordan would be second team DH.
Yeah, maybe.
So, and then both pitchers, and I'd say so, and then Springer, six.
Six, okay.
Six guys.
Okay.
Am I missing anybody there?
No, I think Greinke and Osuna have a shot.
Of course, I got to remember, though, it's first and second team, but the entire league. Changes the whole psychology.
It's the entire MLB.
So, yeah, all right, yeah, I mean, the entire MLB. So, yeah. Let me buck that down to probably... I'd say three or four, which is still pretty damn good when you include all 30 teams.
I think Bregman, Cole, and Verlander are all going to make first team. After that, I don't know. Like, I think Yordan deserves to. I think Altuve deserves to. I think Springer definitely deserves to, but we'll see. But Bregman, Cole, and Verlander, first team. They will announce these teams on December 3rd, by the way. So let's do some headlines here as we head towards top of the hour. A reminder, too, we're going to be giving away some U of H and Navy tickets at the end of headlines here, so stay tuned for that. College football playoff rankings came out last night, Seth, and I don't think any big surprises here. The top five all remain the same, other than Ohio State, for some reason, flip-flopping with LSU.
That was a big surprise, I thought.
Yeah, that is kind of a big surprise. I undersold that. Yeah, that you're
is
right.
That a, is that a jockeying move just to create the possible future move? The one thing the playoff committee never cops to, even though I'm convinced they do it, is... they're thinking ahead about potential and future matchups and how they can jockey around and be sure, okay, if Ohio State loses, can we justifiably buck them down even further, vice versa?
Yeah, the big thing about 1 and 2 in this poll is that 2 has to play Clemson in the semifinal. I think there's going to be a big difference between Clemson and whoever is going to wind up in the 4 spot in terms of the desirability of playing them. I think Clemson's going to be Clemson will be at least a field goal 3 or 4 point better team than whoever's going to be in the fourth spot. That fourth spot's going to turn into a beauty contest, I think, of a bunch of one loss teams.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're LSU, look, you eventually got to be the man. You got to beat the man. You got to play everybody. But I would want to stay out of the 2 spot just because you got a better path to getting to the championship game.
So we're still waiting for this. Our hope is that Oklahoma beats Oklahoma State authoritatively, but without a lopsided score.
Right.
Because we don't want Oklahoma State to fall out of the top 25.
That's right.
They need to. I don't know. Whew, I feel like the committee, because they try to be highbrow, the committee tries not to look at the actual scoring and look at more like who dominated the game.
Yeah.
Whereas the AP is a little bit more knee-jerk and whatever. So if Oklahoma can control the game,
yeah,
Oklahoma have like 45 minutes time of possession, right, but only win by 14 points,
yeah,
then the AP will look at it and say, well, you know what? There's still Oklahoma State gave up a good college try.
They'll go from 21 down to 23 or something like that. Yeah, I like the cut of your jib on that. All right, moving along. There's the buzzer with headlines. Big upset in college basketball last night, and it took place at Cameron Indoor Stadium. Yeah, if there's a basketball game where Duke is losing in November, it's probably not to a big-name team. Stephen F. Austin, the Lumberjacks, baby. They get the job done on a last-second coast-to-coast layup, 85-83 over the Duke Blue Devils. Seth, this is the first time since 2000. That the Duke Blue Devils have lost to a non-conference opponent at home, a stretch that spans, I believe, 150 games. But SFA getting the job done last night.
What are we looking at here? Is this saying more about SFA basketball or Duke basketball?
I think, I haven't watched really much of either team so far this year. I'm going to be honest with you. I think it says probably more about the parity in college basketball. I think it probably – Duke is like Kentucky in now – in that they're always going to be a young team. You know, Duke is essentially just the more prestigious diploma version of Kentucky, where it's just a bunch of young players, freshmen and sophomores, getting cycled through. I think that type of thing tends to happen. Look, Kentucky lost to Evansville a couple of weeks ago. The two biggest upsets of the season so far have been Duke and Kentucky. I think that may be what it's the biggest indicator of.
It's almost like college coaches at premier programs are putting together an all-star team. It's coaching an all-star team versus coaching an actual team where you can really drive a philosophy into somebody. You're trying to get as much accomplished in as little time as possible.
Right. Yeah, so Duke loses, and anytime that happens, my bias is going to show through. I'm fine with it. The Steelers have named a starting quarterback for their game against the Browns, and it's Duck Hodges. His actual first name is Devlin, which I think is a pretty cool first name. It's cooler than Duck.
No, we were talking about this yesterday. Remember, I couldn't remember what the nickname was.
Yeah.
Duck is a nickname. It sounds a little too much. Oh, you know what it is? I think that was a character in Mad Men. I think there was a duck, and I don't think I liked the guy at all.
Okay.
I think the guy, he was the recovering alcoholic, but it was kind of a backstabbing type.
Yeah.
And I don't like this nickname, Duck.
Yeah.
It was a bad character on Mad Men.
Here's Mike Tomlin's endorsement of Duck Hodges as his new starting quarterback. He's not killed us. Okay. So that's the criteria that Mason Rudolph has now established in Pittsburgh by being so abjectly terrible for the last several games since Ben Roethlisberger went out. So Mason Rudolph, who was probably thinking about this game 2 weeks after the Myles Garrett helmet swinging incident, Seth, as his chance to exact revenge, didn't even make it 2 weeks as the starting quarterback.
I got to say, if the Steelers manage to make the playoffs this year, who am I missing that should be head coach of the year besides Mike Tomlin?
I think Sean McDermott in Buffalo's done a really good job. We can get John McClain's take on this.
I've got
Kyle Shanahan in San Francisco.
Nah.
I hear from across the table.
I'm not
going to
give him
there.
Credit for doing what he should have done. It's been 3 years. Come on. You got Jimmy Garoppolo. You got everything you want there.
It's a good question.
And I'm saying Jimmy Garoppolo is a backhanded compliment because it actually Shanahan's a good point. Because he's actually done a lot for Jimmy Garoppolo.
What about John Gruden?
No. They just dropped one to the...
Yeah, they did. You're right. They just lost to the Jets.
I'll give John Gruden coach of the year when he stops annoying me.
What about Greg Roman?
Well, he's not a head coach.
I know. Okay. I'm just being cute.
Wait a second. Does John Harbaugh have cancer?
No,
is Greg Roman going to be the interim coach?
I'm just
the last
being
five
cute.
Games?
It feels like something. It feels like some take one of these... hot takers.
Greg Roman, potential.
Coach of the year should be Greg Roman.
Greg Roman, head coaching candidate that doesn't fit the traditional mold of head coaching candidates.
Yeah.
He's a former Vic Fangio protege.
Tomlin's a good call for coach of the year. He's on his third quarterback. They're 6-5. I think everybody thought they were done when Ben Roethlisberger went down. And James Conner goes down. And, you know,
I feel
Le'Veon Bell and Antonio Brown anymore.
I feel like Tomlin, because Tomlin had almost taken on taken on this reputation over the last few years of, oh, he's just kind of minding the store. Well, Ben Roethlisberger.
Yeah, Terry Bradshaw. And,
right.
He's
yeah,
a
Terry
cheerleader
Bradshaw,
guy.
Call him a cheerleader guy. Okay, yeah. whatever form of cheerleading he's doing, it's been a hell of a good job coaching
working,
this
yeah.
year.
Yep.
The adversity, you know why I don't like the Shanahan, I don't feel like there's been adversity this season. Mm-hmm. I want a coach that's overcome adversity.
Okay.
Shanahan, I feel like the adversity came the last couple years, but this was all kind of the plan and the way it was supposed to work out. Tomlin's had real adversity this year.
All right, Patriots week is now. So we'll start to dig into the Patriots game with the general, John McClain. He's presented by Horn Solutions. We'll get his remaining thoughts from the win over the Colts last week as well. You're listening to Payne and Pendergast.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.